Blog Talk Radio.
Boy, it's time for the Charlotte Line. Good evening. This is Dr. John, and we are going to have a great show tonight. A lot of exciting news, a lot of things that you wouldn't expect, maybe some that you would. I got my buddies with me. Zach, how are you doing tonight?
I'm cold, but I'm happy there's racing. My first ever track I went to at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. I'm happy, happy, happy.
Well, that's great. So everything's going well up in Studio G tonight, right?
Well, it's not on fire, so yes.
That's good. Well, we're glad you're here for sure. Brady, what's up in the cold of Des Moines, Iowa?
Actually, we're not doing too bad up here. We're starting to get a little bit warmer. Temperatures, I think they're starting to flirt with the 50s this weekend, so doing a little early spring tease on us. But no, I can't complain. It's Tuesday. We're almost halfway through the work week grind and almost to another race weekend. So overall, not doing too shabby.
All right. Well, that's some real rock and roll. Hey, Zach, you got a few things to tell us.
Yes.
You got to start.
Well, I think before we jump into everything we had planned out, we should talk about the Charlotte Line Racing League. Week 2 has concluded at Vegas. And, well, Todd is on a roll. He didn't pick the winner again, but instead he did pick Brad Keselowski, who is a really good runner at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. With that, he cements his first place with 74 points. The next guy behind him, Brady, who picked Martin Truex Jr., who finished 20th, getting 20 points, and he is now 59 points. Garrett, Kyle Larson, who got a really good finish of 9th place, getting him 31 points. And that brings Garrett up to 52 points. I picked Kyle Busch, who I thought would be a really strong contender, considering he's won at that track, and it is his home track. But unfortunately, he got a 15th place finish, giving me 25 points, bringing me to 51 points so far. And John had Ross Chastain, who was really strong throughout the race, and we will talk about that. But unfortunately, finished in the 27th position, giving John only 13 points at 44. So right now, Todd is a strong front runner, but we still have so many more races to go. God only knows where this is going to end up.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great to hear, though, that we're starting to get a pretty tight, though, from me on back, though, so pretty good spread. Todd's got the early momentum, but as we can see, really anything can derail that. Just one bad pick or just one, you know, part failure could bring him right back to us, so only two races
well,
in, though.
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna give him a hard time tomorrow night because he and I will be on Pop Culture Stars. We got a buddy of mine from The Walking Dead. I always like getting The Walking Dead people on Pop Culture Stars, so I'll have to give Todd a fit about being in first place, but his days are numbered.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I will say this. Todd does have a great advantage because he did pick a winner of Denny Hamlin at the Daytona 500. He still has Hamlin for availability. The rest of us do not have that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. So before we hop into the racing action, we got two things we really want to talk about. The first one is Ryan Newman, who not only walked out of the hospital, as we said last week, it has been said, and he has actually been seen with a bunch of friends of his, one of them being Martin Truex. Him and his girlfriend got to hang out with him, and Newman even went out fishing, caught a nice big old bass just today or yesterday. But we finally got to learn the extent of what injury he did have, besides a couple burns, is a head injury. We don't know the specifics, whether it's a concussion, internal bleeding, such as. But it's miraculous to hear that the fact that the only injury he got was a head injury, and that man, who's built like a tank, took that hit so hard, it's a miracle, to say the least, that he's only got one injury out of it.
Oh, yeah, aside from some minor bruising right around where his restraining belt would be, right around his chest, yeah, he's very, very much intact, very much cohesive, and seems that he's doing pretty okay. Like Zach said, we're not fully cued in on what the full extent of the injuries are. NASCAR and his PR team being very cagey about the details, which honestly, knowing Newman and the persona that he has, I'm honestly not surprised by this. He's a very, very private driver, and I respect him for that he wants to kind of keep this between his family, kind of work through it, and I know eventually we'll all be clued in fully in detail when the time is right, but it's still very fresh. The wounds from Daytona are still very much in the minds of people, so I don't think the time is right for us to know the full details, but I'm glad to see that he's doing well. He's posted on social media. Like you said, he's engaging with his loved ones, so a much, much happier scenario, a much better case scenario than where we were at a week ago, and all indications point to him aiming towards a recovery and getting back behind the wheel of that six car. It doesn't seem that this wreck has deterred his internal drive or his fiery passion to win a championship, which has eluded him so far. He still believes that he's got enough left in the tank and that he can get the job done, and I'm all for it. I would love to see Ryan Newman shock the racing world and bring the fledgling, Roush Fenway organization back up to prominence and back to a championship heights that they've not seen since the early aughts. So we wish him all the best, and it's just been really good to see him up and about, and we look forward to hopefully more good news as the weeks and days come by.
Now, one thing to say about that, because we do not know the actual injury of that, that is something that the medical field, there are laws against it, and like Brady said, more than likely if and when he's comfortable saying what happened, more than likely we will hear it, and especially with a lot of drivers, especially Dale Jr. being one, a big advocate for safety for the head, as he has had a couple concussions while racing, and obviously his wrecks weren't like Newman's, but it still is crazy. And like, I'm not saying it's a concussion, I do not know myself, but head safety and that is very important, especially in these vehicles. It is great to see he is, up and at him. He is fishing, he's doing the stuff he loves, and he's slowly getting back into it. And like you said, I will be so glad to see him back in the car. I wouldn't hold it, I wouldn't say anything, but I feel like he'll be back in the car before the end of this year.
Oh, yeah, I definitely feel like he won't be out for the full season, but I feel like he'll probably sit out a majority of this first half just to, kind of reflect on his career, reflect on his family. He's facing a lot of different personal changes to go along with these injuries, so there's a lot for the Newman family to kind of discuss as he's looking towards his future. He's in his early 40s, where we're seeing a lot of drivers, most notably Dale Jr. and Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart, kind of duck out in their mid-40s and kind of go off to different ventures, and now we're seeing Jimmy Johnson kind of follow suit. So I feel like he might take this as a blessing in disguise and really just utilize this first half of the season to kind of reassess his priorities. But like you, Zach, if he's well enough on the mend and the injuries aren't more severe than what it seems like so far, there's no reason. There's no doubt in my mind that we'll see him back behind the wheel of that six car, getting prepped for hopefully a championship run in 2021.
Really hope so. He is a great guy. And with that, you talk about championships, there was one driver this weekend who had won championships in multiple series, Kyle Busch, who dominated truck race, but that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about a bounty that's been put on Kyle Busch. Now, to go into perspective, Kyle Busch has won his seventh straight truck race. What that means is, well, he's kind of unstoppable anytime he's at the track. He's not allowed to run more than five races in the Camper World or in the Gainer Outdoor Series. He is only limited to five. This is his first appearance with four left. And after that race, there were some comments and some very vocal people. Kevin Harvick, the most notable one first, saying he put a $50,000 bounty for any Cup season regular to defeat, and I mean to defeat, Kyle Busch in a truck series race this season with only four left and one of them being Homestead. A lot of people are looking at that one. But the stake was put up even more when the CEO of Gander Outdoors even put up $50,000 himself. So it's $100,000, which is bigger than a lot of the purses you get in the truck series. If you're a Cup season regular, and there's been talks that Denny Hamlin, Kyle Larson, there's a bunch of talks for some Cup season regulars who have done truck series starts in the past to come in and race and try to defeat him. This is not the first time we've seen this in racing, but really the first time we've seen it in the top three divisions of the Cup of NASCAR. And I'm excited for this because this means we're going to have some beat and bang up racing, and I can't wait for that.
Honestly, this feels like something straight out of pure 1970s, maybe early 80s NASCAR nostalgia. over the off season, I did a lot of watching of old races, old vintage broadcasts, and this was something that was kind of commonplace, especially in the early days of NASCAR back in the 50s and 60s when, you know, track promoters were getting regulars that would come to visit their tracks, you know, race for track championships, and then they would, you know, put bounties on certain drivers, you know, try and see who can take down the favorite or who can take down the driver that's been on a hot streak that maybe not be the favorite, but it's just the guy that's winning all the time, and they want to make one of their favorites win, you know, bring back the hometown crowd. And it's kind of a playful way to really drum up some drama, and it's actually a really fun and entertaining way. It brings a lot of notoriety. It's something fun for the drivers to compete for, and it brings that little added bragging price. And if you're Kyle Busch, that's got to be super flattering. That's got to be the biggest compliment that any driver can pay them, like, hey, we're going to pay people more money because we're tired of seeing your face win. Like, come on, especially as the persona that Kyle Busch embraces, that kind of, you know, brash, kind of cocky attitude, this just feeds ever more into the lore that is the Kyle Busch saga of him just being super unbeatable in anything he gets his hands on. And if you look at the pure numbers of his Gander Outdoors Truck Series career, he's run 151 races over 18 years, and won 57 times. That's over a third of the races that he's entered. He's parked a truck in victory lane. Just the numbers alone are staggering. It wasn't long ago that he passed the all-time great Ron Hornaday, one of the best to ever step behind the wheel of the truck, for the most all-time wins. So he pretty much has that series unlocked. You look at the Xfinity Series kind of the same way, with over 100 wins in that division. And people, you know, will complain all day long that they're tired of seeing Kyle Busch win, but this really isn't anything new. If you go back to the early days of the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, back when they were first started, the field were just littered with Cup Series stars because that's how they got their start back then. And back then, the Cup Series drivers loved the lower divisions because they could run their own operations and they could just get away from the high pressure, the politics of the Cup Series side and just go racing for fun. You know, back in the day, that was kind of their way of, you know, like Tony Stewart going to run, you go run a sprint car race. But as the Xfinity Series has grown, you know, there's been kind of a push for it having its own, you know, own identity and its own stars. But I feel like there's merit in still letting the Cup Series drivers come down. But I feel like NASCAR's onto something with limiting the drivers, like you alluded to, with Kyle Busch only able to run five of those events and kind of keeping them in check a little bit. But I feel like we could go a little further, you know. Maybe look into a way of kind of making a special rule that if you're a Cup Series driver and you're competing in a lower tier division, you can't compete for the same team that you raced in the Cup Series for. Maybe try and institute a ruling that makes Cup Series drivers have to either race for their own team or maybe a lower budget team and lend their veteran knowledge and their skills to a team like a Ryan Sieg Racing, a JD Motorsports, you know, teams that are growing, trying to learn the nuances that could really benefit from having a Cup Series driver drive one of their vehicles and give them that feedback. That way it's not just, you know, Cup Series drivers coming down to take an easy trophy. They still have to work for it. They still have to grind for that trophy, and it's a hard-earned victory, but they're also inadvertently giving back to the sport. And I know sponsorship would be a nightmare figuring that out, but that would be something ideally I would love to see in a dream case scenario to really make it so, you know, a Kyle Busch coming down to the lower-tier series is seen as a good thing, you know, and not a bad thing. Cause I personally love it when he comes down, and I wish there was a way we could, you know, move the sport in direction to make it a better thing that was still healthy for everyone involved in the very end.
It is interesting because, like I said, he is limited to a certain amount of races now. And I mean, if you look at the stats, you've already said it, but he's won seven in a row, starting 2018 at the Pocono Truck Race, then Atlanta, Las Vegas, Martinsville, Texas, Charlotte, and then Las Vegas again this year. It is interesting. Now, one thing we do have to say, when it comes to Kyle running, he is not allowed to run during the playoffs at all. Actually, no Cup Series driver is allowed to. So it is interesting that he wants to get it out of the way. He said himself he wants to get 100 wins across the board from each series, and he's getting there slowly but surely. He's four away from Xfinity. He's 43 away from the Truck Series, and he is 44 away from the Cup Series. Now, we talked about the truck race. Let's dive into that. It was the first race of the year that wasn't at Daytona because it is all the way in Las Vegas, Nevada, a track that I've been to. I love, and a track that well, is normally, not, I don't want to say uneventful, but doesn't have some craziness happen. Unless you look at the past couple years, there's been windstorms, crazy amounts of attention to the track. I love it. There's a lot of great racing action. You know, Kyle Busch, of course, was in, like I said. He did win, leading 106 laps and winning both stages, but still had a tough going at it in the beginning. He didn't qualify on the pole, which really kind of threw me off. I was like, whoa, Kyle didn't qualify on the pole. On the pole was Johnny Sauter, and Sheldon Creed was the first two, and then Kyle Busch. You know, Kyle's got great trucks. We've seen that before, and to see him not win the pole at a race he was winning at, or a race he was racing at, but also his home track, he didn't get the pole, was very interesting, but still made it very difficult for him in the beginning stages of the race.
Oh, yeah, no, and honestly, I really want to see if there's a statistic out there, if anyone has it, of how many laps that Kyle Busch led, but he was side-by-side with another competitor, because I swear, even though he dominated the event, it didn't feel like it. Because I swear most of my memories of him racing side-by-side with drivers like, you know, Christian Eckes, Johnny Sauter, who got up there, Austin Hill, Ben Rhodes, all these younger drivers that had amazing stellar nights and that were really making Kyle Busch earn his money. But what was so nice, and you kind of touched on it, is the improvements and just the attention to detail to the track surface and everything they've done to make the racing competitive at Las Vegas has started to pay off in a huge way. I have been one who's guilty of definitely panning Las Vegas as a facility over the years. The racing I saw this weekend definitely forced me to eat my words, especially in the truck series. There was several times throughout the night we were seeing three, sometimes four wide racing on the front stretch, and I was on the edge of my seat, you know, biting my nails, just like, oh my God, are we going to get through this corner? And just marveling by drivers literally on the edge of control. I couldn't tell you how many trucks, cars I saw literally dead sideways through the corner, you know, just gather back up like it was nothing and didn't lose any momentum. It was just insane, the racing product we were able to see. And it kind of sucks that, you know, the statistics say, oh no, Kyle Busch stunk up the show. He led up over 106 laps. No, it was nothing. But that really doesn't paint the picture of what just overall was a really, really great race that we saw.
Oh, no, it doesn't. And that's the thing is most of the time whenever Kyle does run these races, he's dominant. And you know, yes, later on, and you know, towards the end of the race, he was that dominant fashion, you know, pulling away from everyone. But for the, you know, first two stages and even the first part of the last stage, he was not, you know, the dominant fashion like you saw. He did start to pull away, but even then it was just like, is Kyle going to win this? Like, wait, there's other people contending for it. You know, Johnny Sauter, who is still a fantastic racer, was up there. Matt Crafton, who started, you know, mid-pack in 13th. Ben Rhodes and Thor Motorsports had a really strong showing for this. And Zane Smith getting a sixth-place finish. I mean, you just saw some of those drivers, and you're like, okay, who's gonna have this? And you know, in all reality, what it was is just hard racing got second, third, fourth, fifth, a little too hard of racing each other to go for that win to get Kyle. I feel like if some of those guys really teamed up during that race, like if Johnny Sauter and Matt Crafton teamed up there the last 20 laps, I really do think they would have caught him and possibly would have tried to contend for a win. It is odd,
yeah,
though, to see it's odd to see this. Grant Infinger, the winner from the Truck Series Daytona race, unfortunately, in an accident, 13 laps in, did not finish, but he's the worst of the Thor Sports. Thor Sports, as a whole, top five for three of their trucks.
Oh, yeah, it was just a super, super impressive night for those Fords. And we saw this last year. Even though they didn't, you know, get their Fords in victory lane a lot, we were constantly seeing the Thor Sport trucks at the front of the field collectively getting top fives and top tens on the regular basis. And that's what led Grant Infinger to his regular season, you know, title. I don't like calling it a champion. I don't know about you, Zach. It just feels weird saying the regular season champion. But that's the distinction that NASCAR is going with, so I guess I have to honor that. But that consistency is what continually helps them set the bar and what led Matt Crafton to the overall championship in Homestead. And it was great to see that, you know, as they're embarking on their 25th season, that they picked right up where they left off last year, and they brought more fast trucks. And we hope to see them in victory lane a few more times. But Definitely not what we wanted to see for Grant Enfinger. He got caught up in a wreck with the number four of Rafael Lazar coming off of turn two. And honestly, I'm surprised we didn't see more incidents throughout the night. Like I remarked, we saw plenty of four and five wide racing, especially on restarts. And so even though the drivers were on the edge, you know, beating and banging and really fighting for every position on the track, it was a relatively clean race. And that's what I love seeing is, you know, we don't need to see massive pileups, you know, just millions of dollars wasted on the front stretch to consider it a good race. It can be a good race without a lot of crashes and a lot of carnage. It can be an exciting race without drivers spinning through the grass because you don't need wrecks. This is not the Demolition Derby or the Joey Chitwood Thrill Show. This is a race, you know, and races are competitive. And so I was really happy that overall we didn't have a lot of carnage to report from the Gander Outdoors truck event. The first accident came out early in the race on lap three with the number 19 of Derek Krause getting loose off of turn four. And it looked like he was poised for a good night with a good qualifying run, but got a little out from under him and he accidentally bended into the wall, but he was able to recover, finished a couple laps down, but definitely a learning moment for the young rookie. Then it was pretty much caution three for the next little while through the conclusion of stage two. And then we saw two cautions in the final stage. The first one of those coming out in lap 75 with the number 18 of Christian Eckes finding the outside wall in turn one. And then, like I said, the final caution coming out in lap 91 between the number four and the number 98 when they had their contact off turn two. So overall, pretty clean night for our truckers, even though they were really, really asking for it a few times on those restarts.
Of course. And that's the thing that, you know, there's a lot of people who are getting their first taste of this track. Well, not a lot of them, but a handful of them. Dane Smith being one of them. Never ran at Vegas. Really great finish for him in the GMS truck, finishing sixth, like I said. Todd Gilliland in the new team for Front Row. Tanner Gray, who, by the way, the first race he ever won was at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway at the Dragster, no more than a football field away from the actual racetrack they were at. Very cool to see that young kid doing well. Stuart Friesen getting a ninth place. Sheldon Creed getting a really good finish. He started really well in second place, finishing 10th. Tyler Aiken bringing home an 11th. Spencer Davis bringing home 12th. Ty Majeski, after having a really bad run at Daytona, bringing home 13th with a great start of 15th. Ross Chastain and the other in another niche truck finishing 14th. Brendan Poole, a guy that Brady really likes, bringing that 30 truck home in a 15th position. Brett Moffitt coming home 16th, not the strongest of finishes for Brett, but still pretty decent. Austin Wayne 17th. Cody Robaugh finishing 18th. Tanner Foldman, who's a new young guy for the truck series, finishing 19th in the O2. Tyler Young. Jordan Anderson coming off a really strong finish to Daytona, finishing 20th. Not terrible for him, a couple laps down, but still a very strong finish for a team that isn't, you know, as strong as most people would think. Not exactly finishing 21st, not having the best run, had a pit road penalty, then that cost her some. And like I said, Derek Krause, finishing 22nd, having those issues early on. But still being able to have that decent run for him, the first time he's really been at not just Las Vegas, but his first mile-and-a-half track. Andrew LaRouche, who spun during qualifying, didn't make a lap, finishing 24th. Spencer Boyd, after having a really bad finish at Daytona, didn't have the best finish at Las Vegas, was the 25th. Tony Roper in the 04 truck, finishing 26th. Joshua Ewing bringing home his 33 truck, 27th. Timmy Hill, who ran a triple header this weekend. One of the few, him and Ross Chastain did that, bringing his 56 truck home 28th, actually had an overheating issue. He was running really strong, started 11th, one of the highest starts for him at a non-restrictor plate race. Stephen Price in the 83, finishing 29th. Rafael Lazar finishing 30th. Grant Enfinger 31st. And Josh Filicki running at the 32nd spot, only getting three laps, had a handling issue. Overall, though, a great race. I really do enjoy seeing the races here in Vegas. The truck race is one that I have not seen yet, a race yet in Vegas in person. I'm trying to go out and see because it is the first track I ever got to see racing at, and it's a lot of fun. It's a cool track to go see.
It's not one I've been to yet, but definitely one I want to see. And I got a buddy that goes to Vegas quite often, and he's all the time telling me I need to go with him for one of these trips. And I couldn't think of a better time to go to Vegas for my first time than on a race weekend, so I also have a NASCAR event I can take in and really make it an experience. So I feel like I need to go and check that out, maybe roll the dice a little bit.
It is a fun track. It is a nifty track. Has a lot of different stuff from the Bullring, which, by the way, Kyle Busch ran his 51 Rowdy Energy late model there, got the win. And I know a lot of people saying, no, it stinks because he took a win away. I'm like, look, it's his home track. It's the place where he got started racing. I don't blame him for wanting to try to race there and get a win. That's one of the few times I'll defend him for going to a track, especially out in Vegas, because that's a trek and a half for a lot late model team to go. But overall, a great facility, great racing action for the trucks, and also for the Xfinity Series, who had a two-day event, kind of like the Daytona 500. They started off the race weekend with a pretty nice day, nice and rainy. Qualifying for the Cup Series got rained out, but we were still able to start the race. But that's it. We were able to start it, and that's just about it. We got 50 laps in, then NASCAR called it after a few hours of rain. After that, then they said, you know what, we'll just run it after the Cup race. But in those first 50 laps, it wasn't too crazy by any means. Lap 20, we had our first caution incident with the 8 on the front stretch. And then lap 47 to the 54, we had the competition caution. And then that's when – or not the competition, the stage caution, I should say. And then that's when the rain really kicked in, and we brought it over to Sunday after the Cup race, and it ended in nighttime, which was really cool. I thought it was something nifty to see the Xfinity guys run there. Your winner, of course, Chase Briscoe, getting hit another great win for him in that 98 car, followed by Austin Cindric getting a second place, which, by the way, Ford, the only two Fords in the field, 1 and 2. Really great to see that. Not often we'll get to see that this race season. And another great finish for Ryan Sieg, who started 32nd, but yet finished third. One of his best finishes of the year. Or not just the year, but the past few years at a mile and a half track. That's just astounding to me.
And definitely, that's a team that's really shown a bunch of growth, especially in the last year alone. They've really benefited from a strong technical alliance and just, you know, information sharing between Rich Childress Racing themselves and Colleague Racing. And they've attracted more sponsorship with a lot of more research and development in their team. And it's just paying off in a big way for Ryan Sieg. And I saw on Twitter, he remarked that the car that he drove to that third place finish is actually a car that's found victory lane at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Apparently, it's an old Richard Childress Racing chassis that they bought. And that RCR chassis took Austin Dillon to the Las Vegas Motor Speedway victory lane in the Xfinity Series in 2015. So it's already been a proven product. And Austin Dillon had to remark that, yeah, I remember that car handled different, you know. There was something different about it. It was a winner for sure. And, gosh, it was so great to see. And for a while there, you know, if strategy, you know, maybe one more caution had fallen his way, he was in the catbird seat. It looked like he had a few more, one extra set of tires because he played his pit stop strategy a little bit different than some of the other competitors, and that put him in just a little bit of an advantage over the competition where we saw the tires were falling off beautifully in the Xfinity Series, and that's what led to some really great racing in that race, the Vegas 300 there. It was just so great to see, and we love seeing the small teams take it to the big cup level teams and just continue to show this growth. And for Ryan Sieg as a competitor, you know, he's really done it his own way, done it the old fashioned way with a family owned team, kind of sticking to his guns and just letting the racing product on the track speak for itself, stepping away when he needed to put a driver in for a sponsor to, you know, get the team by for another week. Just a really good story, and I hope this is the sign of more things to come, because that's a team that definitely deserves it, and we need more storylines like that in 2020 NASCAR, you know, kind of bring us back to our roots and kind of help push NASCAR back to that kind of golden era where we not only praise the successes of the mega teams, but we, you know, don't lose track of the smaller teams that really are the bread and butter and the foundation that support the sport that we love to watch week in and week out. So just a really good run, and how about that for a 5-year-old chassis to really just not show a lot of age and kind of just keep paces with some of these newer models?
Well, if you look at it, and I put it to you this way, Jeremy Clemens, who got his only victory so far in his NASCAR Xfinity series at Road America, had a chassis that was almost 8 years old when he won. So it does show that you don't just need a great chassis, you just need a great team, great strategy, and a little bit of luck on your side. And that's not, I mean, for a non-restriction plate race, that is a fantastic finish for him, and it just shows what their organization is. I mean, if you look at the teams that he finished with, you know, Chase Briscoe, Stuart Haas, Austin Cindric with Team Penske, Ryan Teague himself, Noah Gregson in his hometown finishing fourth in a junior motorsports, Harrison Burton finishing in fifth with a Toyota by Joe Gibbs. Those are top-tier teams. We're not seeing, you know, all the other small teams right there. We see top-tier teams up there. And we see him, and, you know, just run down the rest of this list, Brandon Jones finishing sixth, Michael Annette finishing seventh, Justin Allgaier finishing eighth, Riley Herbst in his hometown as well, finishing ninth, Ross Chastain back in the number 10 this week, finishing 10th, getting good points for him. And then Brandon Brown, another young guy, another hardworking kid, you know, kind of building his way up, finishing 11th after a great finish at Daytona. That's another uplifting story of a small team. You know, finishing better than Justin Haley, who finished 12th. I mean, just the top 11 on its own. You see big teams, big teams, big teams, and then these two small teams who don't have a lot of resources to, not their name, but a lot of resources compared to everyone else. It is insane to see that.
And it's also kind of, you know, on that topic, it's really cool to see those teams, you know, kind of, you know, building their program, you know, making those gains, making those leaps and bounds, and then seeing a team like Colleague Racing that's only been a part of the sport for a few years kind of, you know, kind of take on a story of its own where it went from being a sponsorship deal to the owner of the sponsor being like, nah, I don't want to pay someone to race my logo. I want to race my logo. And so he started his own team. And, you know, how quickly that team has gotten its feet underneath itself, you know, got hit the ground running with strong technical support from Richard Childress Racing. And it's really great to see that, you know, new teams can still be created in this sport. You know, the monies and the costs haven't gone up too high to the point where we're not completely shutting out new teams trying to enter the sport. And as NASCAR keeps trying to rein in the costs and bring some of those astronomical ends of the sport down, we're hopefully going to see more stories like this, more family-owned teams, more, you know, non-big team juggernauts that are getting good support, that have good backing, taking it and maybe bringing the sport back down from a super-sized monopoly kind of level to more of, you know, like a one- and two-car operation per team and really shuffling the board and giving a lot more people their time to shine at the top-tier levels of NASCAR.
It is interesting and it is always fun to see those teams up there. And then just running down the list, 13th, Josh Williams, who, again, that's another small team. Brett Moffitt finishing Jesse Little, I'm sorry, in the number 4. Another small team finishing 14th. Brett Moffitt in a newly formed R Motorsports, still racing for them, finishing 15th. Matt Schneider, who had to start at the rear with a backup car. He had an incident during practice, tore up the front splitter, finishing 16th. Ray Bach Jr. finishing 17th. Alex LeBay, the Canadian, coming down to do some more racing, finishing 18th. Joey Gase, the Iowa native, who me and Brady are fans of, finishing 19th in the 93 for Sieg Racing. Joe Graff Jr. finishing 20th. Chad Finley finishing 21st. J.J. Yaley in the 52 car finishing 22nd. Robbie Lane the 2nd in the 15th for Johnny Davis Motorsports finishing 23rd. David Starr in the number 6 finishing 24th. Matt Mills in the number 5 for B.J. McLeod Motorsports finishing 25th. Timmy Hill finishing 26th in the 61 car. Joe Hunter Nemechek finishing 27th, who had to go to the back of the field. He missed driver intros, which is not that hard to do. Come on, Joe, you've done this enough times. Vinny Miller finishing 28th. Mason Misley, who has made one of his first starts of the year for the number 99 for BJ McLeod Motorsports, finishing 29th. Kyle Weatherman in the 74, finishing 30th. Jeremy Clements finishing 31st, had a rear gear issue, sending him to the back. Tommy Joe Martin in the 44, his family-owned team, had an engine expire. It was very very colorful and very bright, if you happen to watch the race. BJ McLeod finishing the Zero for JD Motorsports, having an, finishing 33rd, I should say, having an ignition problem. Stephen Lynch had a suspension problem, finishing 34th. Daniel Hemric with also a suspension problem, finishing 35th. And Landon Castle with a vibration sending him to the last place of 36th. Still, though, a big variety, and not just the top 12, like I said, but actually the top 15. A lot of small guys, and I know some people think, well, the top 15 is for those mid-packs, but even then, you still have two drivers who are very small, finishing 1 and 2, you know, finishing 10th and 11th. That was a close enough race that I think if Brandon had another lap or two, he could have passed passed Ross and got that 10th place spot. It is a very unique race also, I may add, because this race was supposed to happen on Saturday, got 50-some-odd laps in, called it because of rain, moved it to the end of the Cup Series race, which started roughly about 7:30, 8 o'clock, and they finished it at night, which, and by the way, the racetrack was lost, and what I mean by that is there was no rubber on the track when the rubber was washed away, I should say, from all the weekend preparations, practices, races, and such. So the Cup Series started with a very green track. The Xfinity Series started with a broken-in track somewhat, but still, it was a great race that I got to see. I didn't get to see the second half of it because I don't have Fox Sports 2, but I got to listen in, and holy moly, was that something else to listen in on.
Oh, it was, and you know, what a curveball that rainout threw to the teams, because they were planning on racing those cars in the middle of the afternoon, the middle of the Las Vegas sun on Saturday afternoon, and then be thrown for a curveball when they woke up. Saturday conditions were overcast and cloudy, so already they were throwing that curveball by the cars, you know, having to be set up slightly different than how they anticipated. And then with the rain moving the race from an afternoon race to at night with completely different track conditions, you know, with teams already 50 laps in, with their cars already set up for the track being set up, the track conditions being one certain way. So when they got that green flag later in the evening on Sunday, I mean, the drivers, you could tell, were visibly struggling for grip, trying to get the car seated underneath them as they were trying to, you know, baby their way through until the next caution when they can make some adjustments, because their cars were definitely not set up for nighttime conditions. And so they were struggling a little bit. I feel like that kind of lended itself to spreading the field out a little bit, because I feel of the three races we saw, the Xfinity race definitely was the weaker of the three and had the least amount of action, but I feel like that's not a fully fair criticism because of the obstacles the teams were up against, with the track conditions not being ideal, not being what they were set up for. Some teams got the jump on that, were able to make the right adjustments, and their car soared. Other teams struggled, and they got close towards the end, but by that point the race was already lost and they lost too much time and there was not enough cautions to keep them in contention throughout the night. But overall, like you said, it was a good racing product, and definitely a lot of momentum for that series that they're heading in to another similar track, not a mile and a half, but a 2 mile race next week in California.
Now, one thing I want to say to people, because they may not know this, so the Cup and the Xfinity are in a West Coast swing. They're doing three races in a row in the West Coast, Las Vegas being the first one, then being Auto Club, and then also being Phoenix after that. So all of these teams, and this is how it works now with a lot of them for this section of the year, actually live in Vegas. They will live out of hotels, work in hotel parking lots. Joe Gibbs has their own facility out there to do a lot of work to get haulers rearranged. They actually have, for the bigger teams, I should say, like Penske and Joe Gibbs Racing, and even Junior Motorsports, they will have haulers bring out cars, Xfinity cars, primaries and backups to a facility, and they'll swap them out. Most times, even at tracks, NASCAR will allow haulers to bring in those extra haulers to unload and reload cars so that way they can get cars ready for the next race. I actually saw online Brandon Brown's team is working in the Las Vegas Motor Speedway's garage. There's a few other teams that will use that facility. Some others use places like Mike Harmon is using the Cadillac dealership that they got sponsorship from to do their work. So a lot of teams aren't coming back to their shops. In fact, they will stay the next 3 weeks out there. Once Phoenix is done, they will then drive. Some will drive back, like some of the smaller teams, like BJ McLeod's team. A lot of them will ride back. Tommy Joe Martin. You know, a lot of teams will actually drive back with the haulers or in their team van to then start all over and get ready for Atlanta. So a lot of these teams, some teams are even not, don't have the ability to bring out those extra cars. So teams like BJ, Johnny Davis Motorsports, MBM Motorsports, a lot of them have to use those cars they have. And if they get wrecked, they actually do repairs somewhere in the Las Vegas area or somewhere in the area. I know Derek Cross's team is based out of that area, so they know they're based out of California, so they at least know some places to get body panels or patches or whatever they need. So I want people to know, if you didn't see your driver really competing hard, like if you're a fan of Chad Finley or a fan of Timmy Hill or David Starr, a lot of those guys don't have multiple cars out there, and they will not drive back unless absolutely necessary. And I don't think, Brady, I think I've told you this before, and it is something crazy to think about.
Oh, it's super crazy. But from a logistical standpoint, I do have to applaud this part of the schedule change by NASCAR. The last few years, especially with the advent of this West Coast swing, there was a couple races after the 500 where, you know, the teams would be kind of still somewhere in the East Coast before embarking on the West Coast swing. But I like this idea of getting our Super Bowl out of the way, then getting the farthest, most West Coast races out of the way. And then after that, letting the teams kind of assess, you know, that'd be a four really diverse tracks under their belt, four, you know, the toughest from a logistical standpoint, coordinate getting all the tools and parts and places from that standpoint out of the way. So that way they can really assess how their 2020 is going, what areas are some pain points, what areas they need to work on, and really maybe start taking a look on, is it too early to start hitting the panic button, or do we have something that we can work with towards making a playoff run later on in the regular season? So I like this idea. You know, it's going to be really tough on the teams, but it's really going to separate the teams that came to 2020 super prepared and the teams that maybe have a little bit of maybe some areas they need to work on.
I do like it because it, like you said, it does get some of those the hardship out of there, because the only other race they'll do out there is Sonoma during the race year, and then Phoenix and Vegas one more time. Phoenix will be the championship weekend instead of Homestead. So we talk about how that was a 2-day event, kind of like the Daytona 500 was this year. And right after the Cup Series ran, the Xfinity ran, and the Cup Series race, well, it was action-packed again, and this time we didn't even have a full field. We had only 38 cars, which, you know, kind of stinks, but it was still action-packed, and we had drama from the, you know, from the drop the green flag, from Daniel Suarez having some sort of issue, and then starting back up and still being able to finish the race, to two Hendrick drivers, one having an accident, the other one coming in for tires with two laps to go. What in the God's name was Greg Ives thinking with Alex Bowman? But before we get into that, you know, Joey Logano getting his back-to-back victory for that race, winning again. It's Team Penske at that track is doing really well, and we can say that because Matt Benedetto got his second top two finish. He finished second again. The first time was just last year for Levine Family Racing in 95 at Bristol. This time, Matt, and the interview, totally different. Matt was happy. He was, you know, excited. It was a lot different than when he got his second at Bristol. But Penske, man, they are kicking butt there at that track. And by the way, Brad Keselowski, another man who's won at that track, got an 8th place finish, and Ryan Newey got 11th. So in the top 12, all the Penske cars, that was nuts to see that for one of the first times in a long time.
Well, and you know, the 12th place, the or 11th place finish by Ryan Blaney is not really indicative of the run that he had, because he was in contention with Alex Bowman there before a late race caution kind of forced some teams to either pit or stay out and take the gamble. The gamble ended up being the right choice, being what paid off for Joey Logano in the end. But it really showed that the team had made the right call. If many of you aren't familiar with the situation, over the offseason, the captain, Roger Penske, he called for a team shuffle. even though his three drivers had had some success and were doing quite well with their team and their crew chief pairings, it wasn't quite up to the standards that Roger had for the team. And he thought that the pairings were getting kind of stale and that the results weren't what they needed to be. So he called for an organizational-wide shuffle by putting drivers with different crew chief pairings and basically changing everything but the sponsor and the number on the car for that driver. And it paid off huge with Todd Gordon being the crew chief that led Joey Logano for all those years, being teamed up with Ryan Blaney. You could definitely see marked improvements in the number 12 program because Blaney looked so confident. He led a bulk of the laps. Looking at the car count here, he led 39 laps, so just really a strong, stout piece for him. Joey Logano working with Brad Keselowski's old crew chief, the championship-winning crew chief with Keselowski, Paul Wolf. They had a great day, 54 laps led by that team en route to their win. And then Brad Keselowski, of course, not getting any laps led on the leaderboard and not really showing a lot of strength, but quietly, you know, there in factor most of the day, getting a very solid top 10 performance for that team, a seventh place finish for the number two bunch. So overall, and then you factor in Matt DiBenedetto basically taking the Wood Brothers Team Penske affiliated Ford to the second place finish, just a really great day for that team. And it's got to build their confidence because anytime you make a huge organizational shift, you don't know, is this going to completely offset the balance of what we had going, like circa 2005 Dale Earnhardt Incorporated organizational shift, or is it going to, you know, help the organization and push everyone in the right direction and really bring the organization up, which is what it seems to be the case so far with Penske. So we'll definitely have to keep our eyes on them as they go into the captain's own quarters there at the Auto Club Speedway, a track that Roger had a hand in this next week, and see if they can continue that momentum forward. But if you look down the top 10, there's a lot of good names right there.
Oh, and that's what I was about to say. I mean, looking at the top 10, it's so diverse to what we normally see, because we normally see Penske, maybe a Roush, Hendricks, you know, Joe Gibbs. But you look at it, there's you got Joey Logano, Matt DiBenedetto, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. from the swap from Jack Roush Racing getting third, Austin Dillon getting one of his best finishes at Las Vegas in fourth, Jimmy Johnson rebounding from not the best 2 years of his career to a fifth, Bubba Wallace, and that's a big one, Bubba Wallace in the Coke Energy Chevrolet getting sixth. Brad Keselowski, like I said, Kevin Harvick even doing really good with an eighth finish, Kyle Larson with a ninth, and then Ty Dillon in the Geico Chevrolet finishing 10th. Ty does not have the best equipment, and a lot of people ask, well, why doesn't Ty go to RCR for his Cup Series stuff? Ty even said himself he wants to prove that he's a racer and he wants to do it his own way, and that right there, at the beginning of this year, this was kind of a make-or-break year, I feel, for Ty, because he's had a couple years in this sport. He doesn't have the best equipment. He needs to prove that he can outperform his equipment. And I feel that right there, a top 10 in the second race of the year at Las Vegas, a non-restricted plate, non-short track race, he gets a top 10. That is a fantastic performance for him.
And one other thing, looking at this top 10, the biggest striking thing about it to me is the manufacturer lineup there. In the top 10, you got Fords, but you got six Chevrolets and zero Toyotas.
And no Toyotas. Yeah.
Which, if you look at that, Chevrolet, since they introduced the Camaro back in 2018, they've definitely been the bottom of the three manufacturers, struggling with, you know, handling, struggling getting the power in the right places, just really, you know, not having their hands around that Camaro. They introduced some aero changes, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, to the nose and the tail end section of the car to maybe help improve some of those areas that they lagged back behind their competitors in 2018 and 2019. And so far, you got to feel like they're headed in the right direction, because we saw a bunch of bow ties up in the top 10 throughout most of the event. Like, this wasn't just them looking into these top 10s. Chevrolet's dominated the majority of the event of the top 10. And so you've got to feel like from their camp, they've got to be breathing a huge sigh of relief that they might be onto something with this new Camaro package that might be pushing them in the right direction. But on the flip side of that, what happened to Toyota? Like, a mile and a half track for their bread and butter since 2017 when they introduced this brand new Camry body. The fact that they really, for most of the event, were a non-factor. Kyle Busch had to start at the back. They had some issues in technical inspection. I think you got a little more information on that, Zach. But just they completely fell off the map, and it's got a lot of people scratching their heads.
Well, let's run through the rest of this, and we'll dive into that. So, like I said, Ty Dillon getting one of his best career finishes in a mile and a half, 10th place. Paul Menard. Ryan Blaney in the Menard Chevy, or Ford, that's why I said that, finishing 11th. Clint Bowyer finishing 12th. Alex Bowman, which, again, we need to dive into, took four tires on the last caution with two laps to go, still rebounded to a 13th finish. Chris Buescher getting a 14th. Kyle Busch, the highest Toyota, finishing 15th. Corey LaJoie in that small go-fast team, having one of the a great finish, 16th. Denny Hamlin finishing 17th. Tyler Reddick in his first mile-and-a-half track, that is not Kansas, getting start for the year, finishing 18th. Cole Custer finishing 19th. Martin Truex Jr. finishing 20th. Eric Almirola finishing 21st. William Byron finishing 22nd, and we have something about him we'll get to at the end of this. Eric Jones finishing 23rd. John Hunter Nemechek finishing 24th. Not bad for him and his team. Kurt Busch finishing 25th, the Las Vegas native. Ross Chastain, who had a really great run going for him, even got a stage point. Well, technically he got a stage point, finishing 27th, had some bad luck at the end. J.J. Yaley in the 52, finishing 28th. Brandon Poole, again, Brady's fan favorite, finishing 29th. Daniel Suarez, who had a miss, something wrong on the beginning lap, still getting a decent finish of 30th. Joey Gase finishing 31st. Quinn Hoff finishing 32nd. Christopher Bell, who had a handful a bunch of times of his wheel, having multiple times where he was just on it for that thing, getting it sideways a lot, finishing 33rd. Reed Sorensen in the 77th, finishing 34th. Garrett Smithley finishing the 51 car Rick Ware Racing, finishing 35th. Michael McDowell having some issues. It was motor issues, finishing 36th. I'm so glad I didn't pick him for Vegas. Ryan Preece having engine issues as well in the Natty Light Seltzer Chevy, finishing 37th. And Timmy Hill, who had the Cinderella story last week at Daytona, finishing 38th with a rear end issue, but still finishing 175 laps. Looking at this, it's so weird to see, like you said, Toyota, none of them finishing the only one finishing the 15th being Kyle Busch. And then the rest are, Denny Hamlin in 17th, Martin Truex Jr. in 20th, Eric Jones 23rd, and even, Christopher Bell finishing 33rd. Five Toyotas, and normally we see them up there in the top five, even in the top three. No one, and it's not like they weren't competitive. You look, Martin Truex Jr. got second and third in the stage, in stages. Kyle Busch didn't get a stage point, finishing 10th in the second stage. But it's just so weird not to see that. Now, they did get docked practice, 15 minutes of practice because of modifications to fenders, which was odd. It was at Daytona that this had happened. But then, again, they got the penalty coming at Auto Club for the same type of issues, which will be very interesting to see and hear what Joe Gibbs Racing has to say, if they will say anything. But it is weird to see them outside of that, because they were running pretty decent. I don't want to say fantastic, because fantastic would be in the top 10 and top 5 from earlier today. They were running decent. There really hasn't been a body change or modification, so it's really weird to see that. I guess also it is early in the season. They might have tried something new for Las Vegas, since there are so many cookie-cutter mile-and-a-half tracks, and they're like, nope, we're going back to the old style, and we might see it at the next race at Auto Club. But it is so weird to see the Toyotas not performing like they normally do.
And one thing we do have to highlight, though, even though most of the camp was not with it, the 19 of Truex did have a really strong car, because he was in the top five for the first two stages, like we were talking about, but then had a bad pit stop where they didn't get all the lug nuts either secured or tightened on him, and they had to bring him down for a second pit stop on a caution. That got him back into traffic and into some heavy traffic, where he ended up getting into the outside turn four wall on lap 177, and he just wasn't able to recover from there. And so they'll have to be definitely looking at the 19 team to see what they were doing different. And, we were talking earlier about Team Penske with their shuffle up. Martin Truex Jr. is working for the first time since 2014 without Cole Pearn as his crew chief. James Small has stepped into that position as Colburn has taken a leave from NASCAR to be spend more time with his family and kind of get out of the spotlight, as it were, for a little bit. And so glad to see that so far that pairing is working out pretty well, and that Truex and that team doesn't seem so far like they're missing any beats there, and we'll continue to monitor that situation and see how they progress over the season. But so far, good to go, it looks like, for the 19 team in that switch, as they have the speed, just need a little luck to go their way. And same with Chase Elliott. I know a lot of his fans are definitely
tired of
this.
Oh, my God, I felt bad for him.
I mean, another race where the number 9 car was just dominating the event and had just circumstances go awry. He had a cut tire or something. I don't know what happened to the tire, but the tire went down after a pit stop, of all things, right in the wall on lap 222, so close to the end. And he had victory in his sight, just flat-out dominated the competition. And what can you say? It slipped from his fingers.
70 laps led, won both stages. It's mind-boggling to me. And people are, and some people say, well, you know, that's just racing. Well, it is. It's just mind-boggling that he can that can happen. And on a pit stop, you know, he then cut the tire down. It's just so – and by the way, I do want to say this. Front Row Motorsports posted on their Facebook page and probably on Twitter – photos of a set of tires. I can't remember who it was for, John Henry Nemechek or Michael McDowell, but there was a bolt in one of their tires during practice. And luckily it was the driver, whoever it was, whoever was using those tires, caught it while they were on practice. You know, hey, something's not right, brought it down, and come to find out there was a bolt in one of those tires. So it's not like finding a flat tire at a track like that is uncommon. It does very much suck, though, because I felt Chase Elliott had the win in the bag. I kept hearing his name. Chase Elliott, you know, getting up there. He's getting up there, watching the race, and then all of a sudden I see him go in the wall. I'm like, what just happened? I felt really bad for him, but it does show he's getting much better at those mile-and-a-half tracks. Not only did he get one, but he got two stage wins. He got 70 laps led and was, you know, fighting. He was fighting hard to get that win. He had a pretty good lead at one point and just, you know, he didn't hit triple sevens in Vegas. He kind of hit a 7-7 and then probably a nail or a bolt or something coming out. But that was still a strong race for him, not the strongest of finishes. But right behind him was Ross Chastain, who we need to talk about. He will be back in the number 6 Ford for Roush Fenway next weekend, or for this weekend, I'm sorry, coming up at Auto Club. It is interesting to see Ross getting his first Cup debut with a very strong team. I want to say it that way. Ross has made multiple starts for Premium Motorsports, Spirit Motorsports, for a lot of smaller teams, never a team that has, like, the history and the power behind it, like Jack Roush Racing. And for the first stage, he was really up there. He fell back a little bit but came back up, finishing 10th, getting a stage point. Second stage, not so much, but still kind of going back and forth. Then kind of the last part of the race, he struggled, which is not uncommon. You know, didn't finish. He finished two laps down, which isn't crazy, but just was having a little bit of more of a tough time, I would say, adjusting and being able to actually use his Cup car to its full advantage. But he still showed he has an insane amount of talent. You know, Ross is a fantastic racer. We've seen that both in the Cup and the Xfinity and the Truck Series. Outperforming his equipment is the best way to say it. Dale Earnhardt Jr. even said the same thing. He's outperformed his equipment every week. When he was with Johnny Davis Motorsports, he did that. When he started racing with Nice, he did that, getting their first ever real win. And even with Roush Fenway in the 6 car, he performed really well in that. And it just showed that he's got the talent and he's willing to work hard. I cannot wait to see what he's going to be able to do this weekend coming up at Auto Club. And by the way, he won't have to really worry about overstraining himself because he'll only have to be running the Xfinity and the Cup race instead of all 3 series this weekend.
Exactly. And that's one thing we also have to talk about with that, with Ross's performance. He had to do both races in one day, same as Timmy Hill. So that was a lot to ask of those two drivers in one day, but they both did fantastic in their combined, well, without a shaken out to be roughly 650 miles, basically the Coke 600. So he's just getting hit some much needed practice laps in where he wheels the 77 car in May. But one thing I wanted to talk about
there,
before we get towards the finish
before,
of this,
real quick, there were two other drivers that had to do that, had to run those races. Joey Gase and J.J. Yaley were two other drivers that still had to run those extra 150-some-odd laps after the Cup race. So they were not smelling too pretty after that.
Oh, I can imagine not. And before we get to the end of the race and kind of all the drama that unfolded there, one thing I wanted to highlight that I kind of saw pan out throughout the opening stages of the event, and I feel like we're going to see this a lot on the mile-and-a-half tracks with this higher downforce package, is really kind of two different approaches to how to set up the race car. Even though Chase Elliott won both stages and was, it looked like for the longest part of the event, the favorite for the race, he didn't lead the most laps. That actually went to Kevin Harvick in his number four car. And Harvick kind of had a car set up a little bit different than Chase Elliott's, to where his car performed beautifully on restarts and was phenomenal in those opening few stages, you know, those opening few laps right after. And he was able to lead a bulk of those laps right after initial starts or restarts. But then we would see his car kind of fade as the run, you know, went on, as the tires started to wear. And that's when Chase Elliott's car really came to life. And that's where he seemed to have a couple tenths up on the rest of the competition. And I've kind of seen that kind of become the trend over the last few years, especially with the advent of this higher downforce package, that there's really kind of two different ways to approach how to set up the race car. And ideally, you'd like to find the perfect balance where you get a car that fires off immediately on the restart, but then can maintain that speed over the run. But it seems like in today's, you know, aero rules and how they've set the cars, you're going to sacrifice one in favor of the other. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out over the course of the season. And then also drivers like Ryan Blaney, they seem to be kind of favoring that you know, longer end run. But in addition to, you know, having the cars kind of set up for two different modes of thinking, we were also seeing a bunch of pit strategy play out over the course of the event with drivers such as Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and his team. They performed beautifully by sticking to their guns, running further than every team on a fuel load, really stretching it to the very end, hoping for cautions to fall their way, which it ended up doing when Ross Chastain, you know, when Chase Elliott went for a spin on lap 222 in the third stage. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. was, you know, staying out there, playing those guns, waiting for a caution. This was in the middle of green flag pit stop when Chase Elliott went for a spin, and it fell right in Stenhouse's lap and Brian Patty's lap. They were the leader when the caution came out. They had pinned a lot of the drivers who had stopped at that point a few laps lap down. And so when they were able to come in and make their stop, you know, they were right there in the top five with fresh tires right there in the thick of it. And they were able to maintain that momentum throughout the next 50 laps and secure that team with a top three finish. And so I really got to tip my cap to the number 47 team and Brian Patty for they went in there with that strategy in mind. They stuck to their guns all day, and it paid out well for them. But with all that set up the, you know, the run to the finish, Ross Chastain spinning out with four laps to go. And now we're getting to where you were kind of alluding to earlier, Zach, about Alex Bowman. But at this point, we were about ready to see a fantastic showdown. It was coming down to Ryan Blaney, who had shown a lot of speed throughout the event. He was leading in the waning laps, but his car was kind of starting to plateau, whereas the number 88 of Alex Bowman in those final laps, I don't know what they did on that last pit stop, but Greg Ives and the boys, they made a few adjustments, and that car was on fire as the run went on and as the tires wore and as the cars got a little bit more, you know, loose, a little slipperier throughout the corners, and he was chasing down Ryan Blaney, and a lot of fans were kind of bummed that the caution came out because we didn't get to see what was shaping up to be a thrilling game of cat and mouse between Blaney and Bowman on who would have, you know, been the ultimate victor. But unfortunately, like we said, Ross Chastain, his spectacular run became undone on lap 263, four laps from the finish. He went for a spin in the backstretch, setting up that final restart. And what a restart it was, Zach. Take us through what we saw on that final lap.
I want, and this is what I want from you, because I know how much of an announcer you are. I want you to run it through, because you, and for people who don't know, Brady has done a lot of announcing of races and a lot of radio stuff. I want you to do it because I have never heard you do it, and I love you to death. I don't know if it puts you on the spot or not, but I want to see what you can say to make me feel the jitters and the shakes I had throughout the last part.
Well, when they were coming to get their green flag, they were getting two laps to go to finish the race, and it wasn't an overtime finish. We got the green flag on lap 265 with two laps left in the scheduled distance, and on the initial start, you could tell that drivers weren't playing around. When we dove off into turn one, drivers were already 3 and 4 wide going through that D-shaped curve of the tri-oval of Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And coming down into turn one, Matt DiBenedetto with the move of the race, he was coming up on Joey Logano, who got a good restart and pulled some distance between himself and William Byron heading off into turn one. He got the good start, was looking like he was going to try and pull away from the field over those next two laps. Matt DiBenedetto got a hell of a run through that first opening start, dove the inside, maybe got a little bit on the apron there, muscled his way in and made contact with William Byron. Matt DiBenedetto was able to keep his momentum going. Unfortunately, was not able to track down the 22, but was able to mount a pretty good charge and keep the distance between himself and the carnage behind him. With William Byron getting that hit from Matt DiBenedetto, that rooted him up out of the groove, lost his momentum, and put him right back with the Sharks, and he got swallowed alive. As they kind of thinned out throughout the backstretch, there was a lot of beating and banging happening further on in the back of the pack. Drivers like Ryan Blaney, Alex Bowman, who came to a pit, like Zach came down in pit, put on tires with two laps to go. Many people questioned the move, putting their drivers in the traffic like that, and it came back to bite Ryan Blaney. As they were coming off of turn four, contact between Ryan Blaney and William Byron sparked a four-car incident as Byron came up in front of Tyler Reddick, and they also swept up Kyle Busch in the incident and John Hunter Nemechek, who was having a fantastic run in the 38. And the wreck happened right on the front stretch after Joey Logano had already taken the checkered flag, and unfortunately the race did end in their caution, but what a finish that was. I still am playing back that move by Matt DiBenedetto. Like, he just sailed that 21 car off the turn one. Words just can't do it justice. Just seeing him muscle his way past the 24, and it was just absolutely devastating for the Byron camp. He ran such a flawless race all event, top five for most of the race. Really looked like he was poised to do what no one's done before at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, take his first career trip to victory lane at Las Vegas, but came up just a little bit short, unfortunately. I just ran out of racing room because they were 3 wide, 4 wide for the majority of the last lap and a half that they ran before the caution came out. It was just absolute insanity.
That restart itself, you just saw so many people, like you said, not messing around, just hopping on the gas, wanting to get going. You saw Matt, like you said, Matt, and he did a great job explaining it because Matt just, he was like, hey, William, I don't care if you're ready to go. We're going, and pushed hard. And that kind of, you know, kind of started the, I don't want to say the wreck, but the disaster more or less that happened coming down the back or coming down the front stretch. You know, like you said, cars were 3, 4. At one point there was a car in the apron making it 5 wide. And that's not racing you get to see that much, especially at a track like Las Vegas. It's not that wide. You know, the backstretch is, you know, it's pretty wide. But people going below the double yellow line, which you can do at non-super speedway racetracks. Basically, the only tracks you can't do that, Talladega and Daytona. But cars going below the apron, cars going up, and just that those last two laps, really that restart lap, was the one that got everyone going. And I think, just like you and me, everyone at that track was on the edge of their seats, just waiting what's going to happen. And especially going the backstretch, seeing, you know, Joey Logano having that strong takeoff and seeing Matt DiBenedetto, he was catching him, not very fast, but I think maybe Matt could have done it if he could play out turns 3 and 4 really well, which you can do there if you know what you're doing. We definitely saw a lot of people driving their equipment hard, but maybe driving a little too hard, especially with some damage coming on. You know, William Byron having a tire rub coming out of that and then getting up into the wall. Ryan Blaney having, you know, a bit of beating and banging. John Hunter Nemechek, who the front end of his Ford Mustang you know, kind of getting up in the air from getting into the grass. But it just was nuts to see, and a great, you know, start to the year outside of Daytona. I mean, once Daytona finishes, we often see, you know, okay finishes, you know, oh, that was good. This was fantastic racing through and through, from the drop of the green flag to the caution checkered flag. It was fantastic racing, and especially seeing, you know, like I said, Joey Logano getting back-to-back victories there, and Matthew Benedetto get, again, his career best finish, second. You know, he's only has a handful of top 10 finishes, and to see him get something outside of Bristol and a road course, this is fantastic to see, and it shows that he should be in that Penske Alliance Ford for Wood Brothers Racing. I think one of my favorite moments of that race was early on. And I know it's a bad thing to say, was to see Daniel Suarez, and it's just like, why, like, his car didn't take off, and it was very odd. I still haven't heard what had happened. Still ran the race. You know, yes, he only finished 30th with four laps down, but it's still, Brady, have you heard anything of why his car had issues with that?
It was something electrical or something. They really haven't elaborated, but yeah, no, it was just super, super odd and just absolutely devastating, especially after the heartbreak of missing last week's race at Daytona. That's definitely not what that team wanted as they're trying to get their season back on track. But no, it was just super odd and super early, only on lap two, like literally as they came off of turn four, his car was on the apron at the completion of lap one, and they got it. They hit the right buttons or right switch somewhere and got that car refired, but just not what that team needed at all. And hopefully they get some of those gremlins kind of worked out and get some of these monkeys out their back if they head towards California this next week. But
what's really interesting about that, though, is that he took the green flag, but his car was still chugging along. Kyle Busch started behind him because of some infractions during inspection, put him to the rear. And Kyle's onboard, it showed Suarez not even taking off. It was so odd. He crossed the start finish line, but then was just coasting. And then that's why they brought up the caution flag. It was so odd. And then we saw the camera was on him, and he restarted the car, and a big puff of smoke came out. It wasn't, you know, black or anything. And he took off, and I was just like, what happened? Wait, what? It's fine. Like, the moment I saw the smoke, I thought, oh, he blew his engine without this race even started. But then he, you know, like I said, he still finished 30th on with only four laps down. It was so odd to see that.
Yeah, just super odd. But hopefully they get their whatever gremlins are plaguing that team resolved, and they get things back on track. But, you know, definitely one thing I wanted to touch on, you kind of mentioned it a little bit there. We saw really great racing at Vegas this weekend, and I think the sport needed that. I really was kind of bummed out, and a lot of the NASCAR community was last week. We didn't want to see one of our own drivers get hurt. We didn't want to see what happened Daytona on Monday. And it was really, really too bad, because NASCAR had started with such an amazing amount of momentum for the 2020 season. We saw great racing throughout Daytona. The 500 was a fantastic race. That finish, you know, the wreck aside, was just mind-boggling. One of the greatest finishes I think I've ever seen at Daytona for the 500. And it just, there was a lot of wind taken out of the sail with, you know, that humbling reality that this is still a dangerous sport, that accidents can be very, very rough and can have, you know, really unintendedly harsh consequences for the drivers. And so it was great that Las Vegas was able to deliver, that we didn't see a bunch of single file racing, that we didn't see a bunch of, you know, muted passing and, you know, just an unenthusiastic race, that we saw the drivers, you know, still giving it 100%, and that we saw just fantastic, you know, fearless, you know, blocking, just drivers doing everything they could to put their teams in good position. So I was really happy that we had that, to kind of get some of that pep back in our step, to really kind of get 2020, you know, kind of back pushing, you know, getting that momentum going back a little bit and getting ready for that 36 race week grind. And also, I was happy to see drivers that, you know, needed good runs have good runs. Drivers like Ryan Blaney, who Lord knows what he was dealing with mentally, trying to unpack the drama of the last lap, being the driver that gave Newman the push that sent him sideways. Just all the ill, you know, the harsh realities that he would have to deal with this last week. So I was glad to see that he had a very, very therapeutic, good run in that 12 car. Bodes well for his season, and hopefully he can continue that momentum going. We also saw drivers like Corey LaJoie have a very solid run. He was also caught up in that Newman wreck, so glad to see that he was able to have a solid run to kind of get his season back on track, get his mind right, you know, and get himself over the traumatic stress of dealing with the Newman wreck. So glad to see it for those two drivers, especially that they were able to have good runs. And then also Jimmy Johnson, kind of a quiet run, not really talked about, but that was a very impressive fifth place. He was in the mix all day long. You know, he had a stout car. He even made contact with the wall in the latter stages of the race. I thought his day was done there. It caved those fenders in. I was like, he's going to get a cut tire. This great run is going to be completely ruined. It's going to be 2019 all over again. But it didn't happen. The tire stayed up. He stayed competitive, and he was rewarded with a fifth-place finish. And with this being his last season, being with all that he struggled with in the last two seasons, me as, I wouldn't say a Jimmy Johnson fan, but someone that's grown up in the sport with Jimmy Johnson, it was so great to see that, you know, the team might have the speed to get him the due season that a champion like him truly deserves, that he gets to go off with some momentum, gets to go off with some wins, hopefully, and maybe a shot at the championship, because that's what a driver Jimmy's caliber deserves. That's what his fans deserve. And Sunday was definitely a step in the right direction for that, and was definitely showing a lot of promise for what could be a spectacular run for Jimmy Johnson, that 48 crew, and definitely showed a lot of strength that had been kind of missing out of that camp in the last two seasons. So hopefully we'll see more out of that. But I think what was more rewarding was seeing the perseverance after making that contact, more so than the actual run itself, because that showed a lot of Jimmy of old, a lot of just never back down, never give up attitude that led him to those seven championships. And hopefully the team can build off that momentum and really start pushing that organization in the right direction to hopefully give him more shots like this throughout the rest of the season.
Oh, for sure. And just so people know, Jimmy Johnson has won at that track four separate times, and this will definitely help him, I think, bring the momentum more, and especially with us going to be racing at Las Vegas again this year later on. The temperatures probably are going to be a lot more hotter, but who knows at this point. And like you said, a lot of that stuff, you know, with coming back from that hard racing, and especially everything with Newman, it's great to see everyone back. Everyone's heads are a little more clear, and I think a big thing that we have to say is a big sigh of relief was there when, you know, we seen Newman on social media again talking about, you know, he didn't talk too much about it, but he just said, hey, I'm here. You can't kill me that easily. You can't get me. So moving forward to this weekend, we have to talk about Auto Club Speedway. It is a doubleheader for, it is an Xfinity and a Cup Series race. But one thing before we get into that, after the race on Sunday, that Monday, NASCAR is doing a test for the next-gen car, and it has been announced William Byron will be piloting that car. But there's also talks that they're going to be doing a two-car test session. That has not been announced if it's true or not, but we do know for sure William Byron will be doing a test session at Auto Club Speedway after the race on that Monday. So this is going to be fun and interesting. William's going to be one of a select few drivers so far that has been able to test this. Everyone from Joey Logano to who else?
Austin Dillon and Eric Jones, yeah.
Thank you. That's it. So, you know, we've had a veteran, I would say, Joey Logano is, and a few young guns get to test it. So it will be interesting to see. But I'm looking forward to Auto Club Race or Auto Club Speedway. It is a fantastic track. It is a fast track. It is one of these tracks that they go into the corner doing about 200-ish miles per hour, give or take. Right, Brady?
Oh, yeah, easily. And the track is super wide, so we're going to see a lot of 4 and 5 wide racing like we saw at Vegas. But the track's a little more equipped for that.
Yeah, just a little bit.
And one thing I think, honestly, kind of building off of that test session, it's going to be a really critical test and kind of a unique situation that kind of separates it from the prior three tests, and the fact that William Byron's going to go from racing the current car all weekend and then going to hop in this brand new car. So he's going to have how the current car handles around Auto Club Speedway fresh in his mind as he straps into that next-gen car for the first time at Auto Club Speedway. So from that vantage point, this is going to be a really interesting test to see what Williams' data, what his feedback is, how he likes the car, and how he compares it to his very fresh experience of driving the new car at that same facility just, you know, a couple days prior. So I really think this is where NASCAR is going to see a lot of just invaluable data to really compare what they're currently working with towards what they're working for with this NASCAR next-gen car. And I feel like if they can get a second car out there, that's going to be even more imperative towards that feedback, you know, with whatever driver they put on track with William Byron, to really, you know, lean on their notes of what they just experienced throughout the race weekend with the current package towards what they're going to try and apply and input towards this new package as they're trying to push the sport in a more competitive direction in the future.
One thing that will be interesting, and you hit it right on the nail, is the fact that this will be the first time a driver gets to feel and compare the car to what they run now, back-to-back. Within 24 hours of him finishing that race, he will be in that new car, which will be very interesting to see what he has to say about it, if he can say anything, or if he will say anything, I should say, as well. Because we all these test sessions that we had, they haven't had the old-style car, a.k.a. the car they're running right now, to compare it to without, you know, thinking, well, it's been, you know, X amount of weeks, a month or 2 months or something. Now it's going to be, okay, I've had a day, less than a day to recuperate from racing the old gen to trying the new gen car. What's it going to be like? Is it going to be more difficult? Is it going to be easier? Is there going to be something that really throws a curve to some drivers? I'm always interested to see what they can do or what they will do with that. I'm excited, though, no matter what, because Auto Club has had some banging finishes and has a fantastic trophy, I may add, too. Oh, that little Woody pulling the victory. Oh, I love it. I think one thing I want to talk about when I say spectacular finishes, when I say that, what comes to mind for finishes to you, Brady, at Auto Club for both Xfinity and Cup? What comes to mind?
Well, for Xfinity, the first race I think of, I think it was 2015-16, one of those years, coming off into Turn 1, Kyle Busch just absolutely spanking the field all day, win easily in hand, tire goes flat, into the wall, his race is done, Austin Dillon sneaks by to the inside, takes the win. That race is forever cemented in my memory.
But there's so much more to that, because Kyle Busch blew that, coming to take the white flag, is going, still gunning it. Daniel Suarez passes him first. Daniel's halfway down the backstretch. He runs out of gas. So what happens
next? Kyle
Busch then retakes the lead. He's gunning. Austin Dillon's coming up fast behind him. Kyle then tries to sandwich him between the wall. He, you know, Austin clips the wall, but he still gets the win. That finish to me is one of the best finishes ever at that track. It's not a small margin, you know, 0.0125, whatever. No, it is legitimately an action-packed start-finish line to start-finish line lap of like Kyle Busch, Daniel Suarez, four lead changes between three drivers in one lap to get the checkered flag. It's just like, what happened? I want to see a finish like that again, because that is spectacular racing that we get to see. We don't often get to see it, but that was, in my mind, one of the best finishes at Auto Club in all of NASCAR, even in the Cup Series.
Well, even the Cup Series have had their fair share of good finishes. Think 2011, when Jimmy Johnson and Kevin Harvick came down to a photo finish, or 2013, the infamous duel between Denny Hamlin and Joey Logano, where they wrecked each other out, giving the win to Kyle Busch. We've definitely seen track has gotten aged in, and the drivers have gotten different packages under them. Auto Club is quickly and quietly becoming one of the more entertaining venues on the circuit, and I'm really stoked for this weekend.
I am too. I'm right there with you because of that. This track has not had a repave or even a repavement of any type at it in a very long time. Like you said, the track is matured, as we like to say. It has character. A notable track to relate it to, obviously, will always be Atlanta. Not completely related to it, but still, it has character. You know, it goes through tires. You have to be either really conservative or just say, screw it, I want to try to get this win and eat up your tires. The track is also, you know, notably for having a lot of celebrities there because it's not too far from Los Angeles, California. A lot of celebrities come up to that race, a lot of them, you know, even grand marshals or even special guests. One of my favorites was Bubba Wallace had the Amigos, a rap group.
Oh, yeah.
And Michael Waltrip was doing his grid walk, and one of them was in the car. He's like, I didn't want to go fast, and I thought that was pretty funny. One thing, too, about this track that is interesting is the fact of how big and wide it is, and can take that 3-4 wide, but we will see people on the bottom, in the middle, and on the high side. There's no special, you know, agent to go down on the track to help that. Everyone knows their line. We'll see Kyle Larson against the wall probably a good chunk of the weekend because he likes to ride the cushion and likes to get some speed off of it. I am excited to see what kind of racing action we are going to get with not just this package because we've only seen it one time at this racetrack, but also see, you know, the Chevys, you know, as we said, have gotten much better. See how they're going to react to this track because of how well they did this past weekend. And later on in 2019, I'm ready to see and hopefully we'll see them really maybe get a win at Auto Club, which they haven't been able to really get the past couple of years because of the issues with the car. But I'm excited to see, A, the speed, see how fast they're going to be diving into turn one. And B, see what kind of car conditions, both temperature and handling, we're going to see heading into this weekend.
Oh, definitely. Well, we're about out of time right here, down to our last 4 minutes. So, with all those storylines in mind, we got to get our fantasy drivers, you know, fantasy listeners out there, you know, some picks to keep an eye out for as they're formulating their picks for our fantasy draft. So, Zach, starting off with the Xfinity Series, who are you keeping your eye on this weekend?
Honestly, one guy I'm going to look at is Noah Gregson because he had that fantastic finish at Vegas. He's coming off a career, his first career win. Also getting, just had it, a fourth at Vegas. I feel he's got something to prove. He's like, hey, guys, I'm not just here for a pretty face. I can race, like, seriously.
Great
impression.
Great pick there. Honestly, for me, I'm looking at the 2-4 drivers that we saw last week. Austin Cindric and Chase Briscoe, especially Briscoe driving for the team that won last year with Cole Custer. They've definitely shown a lot of speed at California. So I feel like you got to look in the Ford camp. One of those two, I feel like, would be a solid bet. But now that moves us to the Cup Series. Who are your drivers you're going to be keeping an eye on for the big money, for the big trophy?
Todd, if you're listening, Michael McDowell. Michael McDowell is my pick, Todd. There's your pick right there, Todd. It's worth a shot. I mean, you know, the guy's got a you know, 15-point lead this early in the season. I think he can take one. My first pick is always going to be Kyle Busch at this track because of how many times he's won there, but also of how well he's been able to work the car there. Kyle's always a driver to look at that track. Honestly, it's kind of all over the board when it comes to Auto Club, because no one's really been dominant there. And when I say that, it's never been like, oh, you, no matter what. Like, honestly, the only person you will always say that is Kyle Busch at Auto Club because of how successful he's been in the Cup and the Xfinity Series. But it's kind of hard for me to say who's the driver to look at the hardest. Who's the driver you're going to see really take it? I think him and Jimmy Johnson are going to be the two drivers to really look at. And Bubba Wallace is a dark horse. Of a decent finish again, going off of the past two races, especially at Vegas.
Oh, I think those are good, solid picks, and I think that about does it, Dr. John. You kind of put up with us for another night. What are your thoughts?
Lizard Man and I have had a great time tonight. We had some stuff to do, so anyway, it's been great being with everybody on the Charlotte line tonight. We'll see everybody next week. I'm gonna try to win this week myself. Okay, I'm going to try to have the right pick at the right time at the right day. So from Studio G in Greenville, South Carolina, from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and from Des Moines, Iowa. This is Dr. John. This is Brady. And this is Zach. And we'll see you guys next week on the Charlotte Line. Todd, I'm going to give you a tough time tomorrow night on pop culture stars. You guys be good.
Oh, yeah,
okay?
Give them a tough time for me.
Oh, I will. Trust me, I always do. You guys have a great one. Everybody else, see you next week.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in, everyone.
Bye.
Have a great night.
Bye.
Bye, Dave.